Welcome, everybody, to the third live episode, I think we're at now, Ben, of the Gaming Careers podcast. Isn't it fantastic when Twitch decides to announce something on the day that we're doing a podcast, literally hours before? Because usually how this works for Ben and I is that Twitch decides to do their announcements after our podcast goes out, and then we have to wait a whole week before we can talk about it. But not today. Before we get into any of the Twitch news and streaming news, hello to everybody in chat. I'm Pete. I'm sure you recognize my face. If you haven't caught the podcast before, maybe you don't recognize Ben. It's my co-host Benjamin Green from over in the States. Ben, how are you? How was last week?
Hey guys, afternoon. It's like noon for me and I think 5 p.m. for Pete. So gotta love time zones. I'm doing good, man. I had a pretty good weekend of gaming for once in like months. So I'm pretty happy about that. I heard you had a different type of weekend, but not too bad, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a pretty good week. I got my second vaccine last week with thankfully like no side effects. So I've seen a lot of people that have been like down and out after their second jab. Yeah. I've managed to dodge that somehow. I'm not quite sure how I have, but I've had a good weekend. Things are slowly opening up here in the UK. So like we're allowed to hug people now and like go around to a friend's house within a certain number of people. So it's slowly becoming more normal as like the vaccines get rolled out. But I'm glad to hear you're doing well. Quite a lot to talk about. The big news, I reckon we should just start straight away with the news that came out only a few hours ago. What do you think?
Yeah, let's kick it off with the strong stuff, right? Like you said, it's usually a curse that the juicy stuff comes out right after we end the show. So we're lucky today that it's out before. Basically, what happened is this morning, Twitch announced they're going to be changing the price of subs based on your country, essentially, in the future. So they put out this blog post called Building Global Communities with Local Subscription Pricing. They're starting off with just a few countries, but the idea is to adjust the price of a Twitch sub, the basic sub, to whatever country you're in to kind of accommodate the cost of living there. So I think they're starting with just two countries, Mexico and Turkey, which they said were some of the most people were asking about the most in those countries, apparently. So that's going to start on May 20th, which is in 3 days from the time of this podcast. And then they're rolled out to a bunch of other countries later in Q3 2021. Asia, Latin America, Middle East, Africa, Europe. So everywhere it's not the US, essentially. They also don't mention Australia, although maybe that's part of Asia. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this, Pete? This is pretty crazy to see.
Yeah, this is something that I've seen murmurs of for quite a while. Well, maybe not from Twitch's side, but that certainly from viewers' sides that, you know, watch streamers from these certain countries. Because obviously, like the standard rate of $4.99 for a sub or a prime sub, which is also like the creator gets that much money as well. That makes sense for us that are very similar in terms of economy to America. It seems like a fair price to support your favorite creators, but there's many countries in the world where that can be too much and you don't see as much support coming, even though there's a lot of viewership from those areas. So it seems like communities and local communities within some of these other countries have really rallied and made Twitch notice and got the change that they wanted. So hopefully this rolls out and we have different sub prices for every country, depending on, you know, what the economy is like. And you can all support creators for what feels like for you and me, $5, you know, buying them a beer or an expensive coffee, I guess. it's a good change, I think. But it is going to impact creators, and whether or not that is good, you know, there's going to be a lot of creators that have fans from these countries that are all of a sudden dropping down their subscription price by half, so they're going to receive less income. And I mean, we can talk a little bit about what Twitch is doing to try and support that. I don't know if you've scrolled down and seen this bit, but the Twitch is basically going to do a 12-month program where they're going to try and help creators deal with the impacts from this. I mean, I would like to think in the long term there's going to be a positive impact for creators, because hopefully more viewers from these countries are going to be able to afford to support creators. So hopefully in the long term it's going to be an uptick in revenue, but certainly in the short term there will be creators that see a dip. So it says here that like eligible creators will be supported through a 12-month program that guarantees a certain level of revenue. So do you want to talk through this a little bit?
Yeah, basically, Twitch is covering 100% of the baseline channel and Prime revenue for 3 months, and then slowly they're going to taper down the incentive over the following 9 months. So for the next year, you'll have some additional support if you're eligible for this program. Because the big question, like you said, is the is the basically for most countries that aren't the US, it should go down the cost of Prime subbing or just subbing in general. So the question is, will that cut be enough? Like, if it will enough people subscribe at that new rate to make up for the ones that you're losing at the previous rate if you're a creator, to keep that revenue balanced? So Twitch is kind of helping support that for the next year or so. But then after that, we'll kind of have to see where it actually ends up. So really, it depends on really a prediction from chat almost. Like, do you guys think that more people will end up subscribing and we'll see more revenue overall for creators? Or do you think that it's not really going to make more people subscribe and it's going to lead to less revenue for people? I'd be interested to hear everybody's thoughts on that. But I am glad that Twitch is at least supporting people, because it definitely, like, if they drop this on everybody and you immediately had that price hit, that could be, you know, for some creators, that's a huge cut potentially to your revenue. So I totally get that. And I think it's a good program. We'll just kind of have to see where we end up after the next year or so, once this is tapered off and we're at the actual base rates of the program.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be one of those things that we have to kind of keep track of what the impact is like. And with the amount of fluctuation that most streamers see anyway, month to month, it's going to be interesting how they calculate, you know, what a base rate of salary that they're going to be basically be paying out to people. And also what makes somebody eligible to receive this kind of fund. Because, you know, if you have one supporter from one of these countries, does that make you then eligible? Like, because you're going to be receiving less from that one streamer, or do you need a huge stream and, you know, thousands and thousands of viewers? But I think it's interesting. It's definitely going to cause a lot of discussion, and we're going to have to see how it affects people's payouts in the coming months. Like you said, I think in 2 or 3 days time it's opening to the first two countries. Let me get this right. Yeah, Mexico and Turkey. And I did see somewhere in here the rest of the rollout, but certainly a lot of other countries through rest of Asia and Europe and places like that. So it's going to be site-wide basically for all the different creators. Actually, I think is a good thing. It's kind of reminds me a little bit of how YouTube Super Chat works. I know it's not the same in terms of membership, but you get a lot of different currencies being donated through YouTube Super Chat, and YouTube tries to calculate how much money has been donated by giving you a different color based on the Super Chat. So they're kind of doing the conversion in the background, so you as a viewer don't need to have this like mind map of currencies and what is what value. So when you see, you know, a 700 rupee donation, you know how much that is based on the color that YouTube puts through. So I think it's a good implementation, and hopefully creators get behind the fact that you're now, you know, you're more supportable by people in these different economy countries. So hopefully it's received positively, but it completely depends on the support of this next 12 months and the rollout, I think.
Yeah, and I just took a little deeper dive into the eligibility. It looks like you're eligible for this program if 20% of your baseline revenue is from countries outside of the US, Canada, Japan, Israel, Switzerland, and other territories. So I guess basically if your revenue is coming from these countries that they're rolling out into more than 20%, then you're eligible. And you just have to keep that eligibility through the full 12 months, you have to stream 85% of your baseline hours, which I gotta look a little bit deeper into that. Basically, if you're getting a lot of revenue from outside the US and from these countries they're rolling out to, then they'll support you theoretically through this program. So I guess that makes sense to me how they're doing that.
Do you think Twitch is ever going to go the YouTube route where you can set your own sub tier prices? Or do you think this is going to be set tier one, tier two, tier three? Because tier two and tier three subs are, I feel like they're never used really on Twitch as a platform. I'd love to see the stats behind tier one and prime subs versus tier two and tier three. So why don't they give that option to creators to set their own prices like YouTube has?
Yeah, I mean, I would love for that to happen. I don't know if they will, because it's a huge feature on YouTube. So maybe if they feel like YouTube is competing in that area, they might add that option. But like you said, I don't know a lot of people who use the $10 and $25 tiers, except for rare circumstances. The tier three sub has become kind of a meme at this point on Twitch. But I'm sure people do use that sometimes. So I would absolutely love for you to set like that $1 sub or just custom ranges of that kind of thing. Which also kind of goes along with people. Some people said that when they rolled this out, they should have just kept the same split for creators essentially and tanked the hit on Twitch. Now, of course, there's reasons Twitch doesn't want to do that, but that's kind of an interesting take, is to think about like Twitch could have still rolled this out and not changed the creator revenue and just changed their side at the same time.
I mean, people have been asking for a better split than 50-50 by default on Twitch for as long as Twitch subscriptions have been a thing, haven't they? And that's one of the big pluses that YouTube streaming has is that they have a better split, I think 70-30 for members. So yes, whenever Twitch announce anything to do with subscriptions, people are secretly hoping that they're going to also announce a better split for subs. But I guess whilst they're the number one platform, do they really have to worry about people leaving for a better split? It would be really nice, yeah, if they did, but they also have to meet Amazon's targets of generating certain amounts of profit, I imagine, every single month and year. Yep. So I can't see them changing the 50-50 split unless people are really en masse leaving to YouTube or Facebook Gaming, one of these platforms that does have a better split.
Yeah, unfortunately, which I think is something we can maybe transition into a little bit. For other news this week, we also saw reports of people actually losing their 70-30 splits on Twitch this week from a couple different sources, which is kind of interesting. And it seems like it's people who've had it for quite a little while have gone back to the 50-50 baseline instead of 70-30. I actually wasn't really aware this is something that Twitch did personally. I don't have this split, but it's just kind of interesting because people who had this for like 10 years, it seems like, even are still losing it, which I guess makes sense. Like, they want you to keep working and hitting certain thresholds to keep that percentage. But you think there's also the case for creators who've been on the platform for a decade almost, or been involved for so long that they would just be kind of grandfathered into that. So I don't know. That was unfortunate, I think, to see. And just another case of why other platforms are looking a little bit more appealing in that category sometimes.
Yeah. So to explain this, there was a few, I think you picked out a couple of tweets really this week, didn't you, of streamers, nobody huge, but certainly partner streamers who have lost their 70-30 split or any kind of partnership agreement that they had with Twitch that was better than a 50-50 split. So typically how this has worked, I'm not saying how it works now, but when you become a much bigger Twitch streamer, you can start to negotiate your contract a little bit with the threat of moving platforms if they don't agree. And Twitch has previously supported people from a 50-50 split on subs and bits to something like 70-30. So certainly the bigger creators on Twitch, I would imagine, are all on better splits than 50-50. So a couple of tweets this week from streamers who are partnered, who have lost that 70-30 split and have been moved back down to 50-50. And their reaction, their initial reaction in the streamers, is because they're not as popular as they once were, which is probably true, and it's probably why Twitch is looking to put those people back to a 50-50 split. But it does seem like it's just asking for bad publicity from Twitch, doesn't it? Like, how much money are they really losing by going from 70-30 on a small creator back to 50-50 when these people got those good contracts because they were there at the start? The two examples that you pulled anyway were people that have been on platform since the dawn day of Twitch, so 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's where I kind of say, at that point, can you just keep them grandfathered in? Because how much money are you really losing on Twitch's side, like you said? And it's also just like what the partner contract means, and if it's, I don't know. There's been a lot of different versions of the contract over the years, for sure. But I was just kind of sad to see that. And I bring that up because it may be happening to more people. So if you've seen this happen, or maybe you've had it happen to you, just know that you're not the only one. And there are other creators who are in this situation. So just something to be aware about if you're looking for that.
I think it's relatively rare that streamers are on a contract that differs from the default partner affiliate contract, which is a 50-50 split. So I think this is happening to a very, very small percentage of a very, very small percentage of people already. But yeah, something to keep track of. Just Twitch, really, after all the money, I guess. but lowering the sub prices, that's probably going to hurt Twitch's underlying numbers as well. But maybe they're seeing more and more viewers from developing countries, and they want to be able to allow those viewers to support creators. So it's probably driven by profit, like all the decisions are by these major companies nowadays. Whilst we're on the topic of money, should we talk about YouTube's big $100 million fund? I'll bring this up on screen now. So YouTube, all these platforms now basically are competing so much for you as a creator, because if you're a good creator, you're going to bring a lot of viewers with you, and they want to be the dominant platform. So YouTube Shorts, which for anyone that doesn't know, is a carbon copy of TikTok. TikTok doesn't have a feature name for it because it's just TikTok, which Instagram also copied, and I think that's called Instagram Reels. So Instagram Reels, TikTok, and YouTube Shorts are essentially all vertical video that you can scroll endlessly, and it's 60 seconds or less, I think, is the limit. YouTube really wants to compete with TikTok and bring a lot of creators across from TikTok, or maybe more importantly, make sure that no big YouTubers are starting to create TikTok accounts and using YouTube Shorts instead. But they've introduced a $100 million fund, which is going to be distributed over the course of 2021 and 2022 monthly, I think based on the performance of a short. So if you're, you know, if your short does really well, gets a lot of engagement, gets a lot of shares by people, then you're going to be eligible for a portion of this $100 million fund, which I imagine is going to be $1,000 or something like that. It can't be huge, huge numbers, I don't think. But to put $100 million up to basically say, we've built TikTok, why leave? Stay on YouTube. You can earn money here. And I know TikTok is doing something similar, but I thought this was really interesting because from the YouTuber's perspective that I have, I'm always a little bit scared about these new features. There's so many rumors of like when Premiere started or when Live started that you shouldn't do it on your main channel because you can kill your channel's ability to get recommended in the algorithm. And some features like come and go. So it's always weird to like want to invest loads of time into a new feature when it could just disappear in a few years' time. And YouTube Shorts feels like that for me. I haven't created a short on my channel. And I know that some creators have and have seen mixed results, but I guess I have I'm a little bit anxious to just from the fact that I have a relatively large channel. So this, now seeing this news, basically for me cements that YouTube really believes in this and it's not going to die this time next year because this fund is lasting until at least the end of 2022. So they really see vertical video and like this quick form attention span, low attention span content being like a big part of their strategy going forward. So yeah, Ben, I want to hear what is your first YouTube short going to be so that you can secure a big bag from YouTube next month.
People in chat are asking for the hot tub streams, man. So we're going to have to do something around that. No, I think this is really cool. I don't know of, has YouTube done other funds like this for content types? Because we've talked a lot with Twitch, with the Sports Accelerator program, things like that. But I don't think YouTube's had one before that I know of. Do you know of any?
Nothing public, I don't think. But they've obviously had exclusivity deals with streamers. So I guess this is a branch of that. They're just making the fund publicly available rather than something you have to discuss internally with your YouTube partner manager or something.
Right. Yeah, I think this is really cool. And like you said, YouTube does add a lot of new features that come and go with premieres and even like polls and statuses got added and I think kind of went under the radar. But this having such a big fund behind it, I think makes it pretty clear they want to support this, which makes sense when you look how big TikTok is and not only TikTok, but even like Instagram stories and Snapchat and that whole format of video is just taking over.
I forgot about Snapchat. That was like the original stories feature, wasn't it? And then Instagram stole that. It's funny how many platforms there are now and how they're so worried about dying like Snapchat has. And Snapchat probably is still relatively popular, but at least in my circles, it's like a dead platform because it was built around a feature. That feature got copied by everybody who had other content types. And then you're like, why do you use Snapchat? And we've seen this with Clubhouse, haven't we? Discord has introduced stage channels. And I know that like other platforms are introducing Clubhouse's feature into their ecosystem. And you
it's
know,
all stealing the platform ideas basically and just moving it around to your platform.
It is. And I wonder if it dilutes YouTube as a platform when they're going to have like so much emphasis on shorts. Because you see, I don't know if you use the mobile app now, but they've replaced the Explore tab with the Shorts tab. So it's like one of the four tabs down at the bottom of the YouTube app is Shorts. So they think it's, you know, equivalent to normal videos when people are browsing via mobile. And
That's a good point. I think somebody was asking in the chat about, there was the whole conversation about is Twitch dying recently? And I think this is an important thing to think about is there's always a good value to bring new types of ways to use content on your platform. But at the same time, you kind of lose that sense of what your platform is known for, if that makes sense. Like, I think that's one of the strengths of Twitch in general is they're just known for live streaming. Like live streaming is everything Twitch does. Versus Facebook at this point does, it's the jack of all trades, right? Does whatever you want to on that platform. YouTube is adding shorts, things like that. And so like, while I think it is nice to give yourself more options as a creator on one platform, it also kind of dilutes the strength of that one medium on a platform. So I don't think that's really happening with YouTube shorts in particular, but it's something we keep an eye on. Just as something with Facebook in particular that I'm very aware of is like Facebook does so many things at this point that I don't like think of it as a live streaming platform, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically built a version of eBay into its platform with Facebook Marketplace. Yeah, it's trying to do too many things. Mm-hmm. It's interesting with Twitch because it's, like you say, it's Twitch's biggest strength is that you know you go there for live streaming because that's all you can get there. But it's also the fact that live streams mm-hmm. as a media are so difficult to be discoverable. Like, it's so hard to suggest live streams because people aren't browsing them like they are any other content type. Like, live streams and shorts are kind of the polar opposite. Shorts is like scrollable. You're probably watching less than 5 seconds of most, and then maybe you watch one the whole way through, which is 30 seconds or something. But how many times are you browsing like 5 seconds of live streams? You're not. You're just finding somebody that you know you want to watch, and you sit and watch them for a few hours, and then when they stop streaming, you stop watching, and that's the problem with Twitch. So, like, it's an advantage and it's downfall. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch Twitch over the next year and see what happens. Because are they going to try and, like, compete with YouTube and start building out a VOD platform? I don't think so. I've been asking that question at every TwitchCon that I've gone to. Like, should I be uploading my tutorial videos to Twitch VOD? I still do. And they get like 30 views a video because they're not trying to push VODs. And I know that we've seen like other creators, I've spoken to people at Twitch before about the whole clip platform and how that could be amazing. I know Harris has done a video on that as well. Like, he redesigned mm-hmm. what the Twitch app should look like with browsable clips, but it doesn't seem like they're fussed by it at all. So they don't seem to be going down that path. I mean, we're getting way off topic. We somehow always manage to come back to Twitch, even though the news here is about YouTube's Creator Fund. But yeah, will we see Twitch start to do this? I guess this is in a weird way kind of similar to what we talked about last week with Twitch's like sport fund. I can't remember mm-hmm. what they called it, but where they wanted to get more sport talk shows and you know, drafting decisions and things like that, like live streams on Twitch about sport. This is YouTube doing the same but with shorts. So these platforms, they're well aware that creators are the thing that they need. Good creators on their platform will bring viewers, so if they can incentivize the creators, then the platform as a whole will grow. So it's a great time to be a content creator because you've got platforms like battling for you. I'd love to see this happen with live streams, you know. Imagine the news mm-hmm. title for YouTube 100 million fund for live streams. Like, people would just flock, wouldn't they? It would leave Twitch for the chance of, you know, getting some of that pie. So really interesting. Maybe I need to create a short and just get over the hitch of not doing it, because the live stream has been great. Like, I've loved live streaming this podcast. And I definitely had my worries about that before we started doing it. So maybe I just need to, you know, stop being such a perfectionist, create a YouTube short of me dancing to the top 5 single and, you know.
Yeah, shorts are weird. I think you even talked about how you almost don't want to put out a short on your main channel because it's a different format. I think even like Mr. Beast has a clips channel, right? Or a shorts channel. So
a lot of big creators do that. Yeah, and that's not what YouTube wants. Surely when YouTube sees that, they're like, no, we haven't done this well, because they don't want big creators creating a second channel which is going to get a fraction of the traffic that their main channel would just to test out a new feature. They want those big creators to use that new feature on their main channel. So yeah, it's a difficult one. I'd love to see how. I don't use YouTube on my phone that much, so I need to like explore the shorts tab and see actually what's going on mm-hmm. there, because it's highly discoverable, isn't it? Is it actually taking out the thumbnail and title part of a YouTube video, which is so frustrating as a content creator, because you don't even see that. You're just scrolling and the algorithm is literally starts playing the next video that it thinks you want to watch. So you kind of get over that fact of having to make a title and the thumbnail that people want to click on. So I don't know. It's really interesting. I need to play around with it more to just like increase a little bit of expertise, I think. But
it kind of makes you think that they want to grow a new creator audience with this, not take existing YouTubers and have them try to make the shorts, but actually just have new entirely creators come onto the platform and just do shorts, which is kind of interesting. You think about TikTok, because probably TikTok people aren't as interested in making full traditional YouTube videos versus this format. So I think that kind of makes sense if they get a lot of new creators that way. It's weird, like you said, because you're so ingrained with YouTube to do like discoverability off of titles and keywords and tagging and research. But like with shorts, can you really do any of that at the same time? It's interesting. So I think we'll see some cool creators coming out of this if there's this much support behind it in the future, honestly.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to follow it as it goes on. But it's good news overall, isn't it? When these platforms are putting big money behind, I hope it goes into hands of some small creators that can leave their jobs and become full-time shorts creators. There's got to be some good jokes about shorts as an item of clothing, as a name, but I can't think of any right now. So let's move swiftly on to talk about Discord's rebranding. Ben, do you love it or do you hate it? Talk to me.
I love the logo. I'm not sure on the text, which is kind of what I see a lot of people saying. I think the logo actually looks nicer, and it's really not that different from before, right? Mm. I think the overall thing, do you have a, yeah, it's on the screen. Okay. So I think the goal with this is they said they want to make a more friendly brand, essentially, which to me is they want to make a more kid-friendly brand overall and just not so endemic to gaming, because I think Discord at this point has hit a lot of the gaming audience, right? And with so much funding behind them, I think they want to expand beyond just gaming into other areas. So that's my kind of read on this. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on seeing this come out?
Yeah, I mean, this, for anybody that works in graphic design or marketing or anything like that, this is a fascinating read, this whole article, because they really go into their decision making behind curving edges of the logo. And there's an image here of how they want the, they want to be able to animate the logo and turn it into more of a character. But it's so interesting, I think. And then, yeah, like you said, the new word mark. So they have a new text part of Discord that goes next to the logo. A lot of people don't like the, I've seen loads of complaints about like the lowercase d and the I being like so curvy. And they've changed the blurple. They've changed the color. Which I didn't actually notice this morning when I saw somebody else complaining about it and I had to like Google the color difference. And it is actually quite noticeable. It seems like they've just cranked the saturation.
Yeah.
But they've added more colors to their color chart as well. They're definitely going for the more friendly, like welcoming vibe, aren't they? And away from that, maybe a little bit more gamer aesthetic.
Yeah, I think our chat agrees with us from what I'm seeing. No one likes the font right now. I don't mind the color change at all, and the rest of the brand is fine. The logo I like because it's really the same logo, just slightly different, but the text itself is very different because it's no longer all caps. It's more of like the lowercase design. I don't know. I don't think it's a huge change, right? Like I'm still going to use Discord every day. I don't think they've really changed the platform as a whole. It's just the brand overall, which if it gives them more opportunities to do, you know, some creative marketing and fun ways to use the brand, then sure, all for it. I like the new blue, actually, even though the old one wasn't bad. So, yeah, I like it overall, but the text could definitely be a little better, probably.
I'm wondering if, like one of the users has pointed out in chat, Una, hopefully I got your name right, it feels very Slack vibes. Like it does feel like, even though it's a little bit more childish maybe, but it's also trying to be a bit cleaner and like maybe a bit more. I wonder if this whole rebranding decision is because of what we might see in the coming months where they're going to try and push non-gaming communities really hard on Discord. They already have done that with the server discovery. If you look through the tabs of that, like gaming is just one, and then they have programming, art, music. They have loads of different types of communities that you can browse through the server discovery. So I wonder if this is all a decision because they're going to, you know, really push marketing on people that are already using Slack and businesses and things like that to get away from it just being like your gamer friend's favorite chat app and actually something that people are going to use, you know, in place of WhatsApp and in place of business communication like Slack and emails. Mm-hmm. Because we've said it 3 weeks in a row now, haven't we? We don't have any complaints about Discord. It's one of the few platforms, if you can call it a platform.
That, well, now we do. Now we've got a bad logo, man. No, exactly. I think you're right. Because they even talked last year about trying to get more into education, especially with everyone being remote learning and everything. I think they really went after the kind of the student side, but now they're really expanding beyond just gaming, I think. There's not even much gaming imagery in the branding they showed here. I think there's like a controller in that first image, but everything else is very kind of generic, just fun imagery, you know? I think they're really moving away from just the gaming stuff as much.
Yeah, they talk about in this blog post of how a lot of people thought that the Discord logo was like a games controller from top down, and the eyes being the analog stick. So maybe they really are moving away from gaming, but until they really mess up, I can forgive them for a font choice. Yeah. You know,
that's until maybe just Gilded.
Exactly, until Gilded overtakes and gets bought by Microsoft, like we talked about last week. But I always like seeing things like this, like rebranding. When I first created gaming careers, I literally made the logo in about 30 seconds. So when I went through rebranding, like, I'm making similar decisions, but obviously it's just me making the decisions. So when you get to see Discord making like decisions, you want to read about why they've done that and why they've chosen to do it. So I find it interesting. Maybe I'm a bit niche about that, but Discord's come up on this podcast like the last 3 weeks. They clearly, you know, they want to be a big platform that's talking about streaming and community and growth. So maybe they're, you know, they're really going after the big dogs now that they've been valued at 10 billion or whatever Microsoft tried to buy them at. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Discord. I'm still holding hope for them really chasing the live streaming market and expanding their like internal 50 person live streams to something bigger. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see. What have we got next? We can talk about the Twitch hot tub meta, but we're not really talking about the meta here, are we? We're talking about the change on the Twitch channel. Do you want to explain?
Yeah, so this I just randomly saw this yesterday. So we talked how, you know, Twitch had their Let's Chat thing a couple weeks back and said you can talk about anything. People asked about the hot tub situation and DJ Wheat did not handle it the best. We'll just say that. After that moment, they canceled that series moving forward and said we're not going to do that anymore because of how that one went. And I looked at the Twitch channel. They were doing another show called Public Access or something. I actually don't know what the show is about. But turns out they have blacklisted the term hot tub streamers in the chat. So if you type it, it won't go through so that you can't even mention it in their chat, which is kind of funny. Just small little piece, but just shows you, man, the fallout of that Let's Chat situation and kind of how they're still not sure how to deal with it, it seems like.
Yeah, so for people that are just listening to the audio of this podcast, the screenshot that we have is basically somebody tried to ask about hot tub streamers in Twitch's weekly show, I think it is, called Public Access. And as soon as they typed in hot tub streamers, the default message they got back was, your message wasn't posted due to conflicts with the channel's moderation settings. So Twitch has gone into their moderation settings on their own channel and removed the term hot tub or hot tub streamers, which is just pretty funny, really. Because if you think about it, what they tried to do was have this show where they talked openly and honestly about any questions that you had about Twitch. DJ Wheat, I would say, was unprepared for the question, which everyone knew was going to get asked, but nobody thought was actually going to be answered. Tried to answer it, complete fallout. They cancelled the show, or they put it temporarily on pause, and now this is like the next level of it. And it's just quite funny to see them like walking back with the tail between their legs. They now don't even want to see questions asked about it in chat on their channel. So I don't know. When are we going to get a real response about this whole hot tub meta? I don't know, but they're clearly sick of seeing it filling up their chat in every show that they've decided to ban right. It as a term now.
Yeah, clearly it's being asked a lot after that situation. So just a funny little goof that we saw this week. We also, you want to talk about the Twitter Blue stuff really quickly? Which
yeah.
Just came out, I think yesterday I saw this come out, and it's kind of like a rumor slash leak type thing. So I don't think it's fully announced yet, but apparently Twitter's working on an actual monetization play. We talked about the donation integration last week, but now they're supposedly working on Twitter Blue, which is the premium version of Twitter that you pay some amount each month for. It said, you know, $2.99 a month in this leak, but that may change depending on what it comes out like. But the idea is you get extra Twitter features for subscribing to this version of Twitter. And I think the biggest thing is things like ads removal, and it's supposed to be a more compact experience, but then also potential new features to use on Twitter, which one was an undo tweet that I saw, where after you post a tweet, you'll have like 5 to 6 seconds to hit undo and unsend the tweet, which to me is not that huge because you can just delete a tweet anytime, but maybe it's a little helpful.
It made me laugh that this is one of the features that they're like selling it. Yeah. I'm like, is this really that big? Like undoing, I know people have been asking for years for an edit button on tweets, and there's certain reasons why I think Twitter have said they can't do that. They don't want people getting thousands and thousands of retweets and then editing it to say something, you know, anti-Semitic or something, you know. So undo tweet, but like, this is no different for you just having the patience to read your tweet back for 6 seconds before sending tweet or deleting it. It's only 6 seconds. Like, not many people are going to see it, really.
Yeah. It's not going to save you that much time, I feel like. I've done that before. I've sent a tweet by accident, but you can just delete it anyway. So interesting. But there was also a couple other things that got teased, like bookmark collections. Again, I don't really use the bookmark feature on Twitter. Do you, Pete?
No, I didn't even know there was one, to be honest with you. I imagine it's a way of saving tweets, and now you can put them into different folders. I think the biggest thing for this is is removing ads, honestly, from your Twitter feed. Like, if you're using it all day, every day, then maybe it's worth it. I wonder if they're going to try and combine this Twitter Blue subscription with their, like, donation in a way, you know, like Amazon Prime have done with Twitch Prime, where, you know, sign up for Twitter Blue and every month you can support one Twitter account,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, send them 50% of the however much it costs to get Twitter Blue. That would be pretty cool. But for me, I don't think the features right now stack up to being worth it, even if it is only $2.99. The only thing I can see is being the ads removal. I don't think undo or bookmarking tweets into folders is really going to be big enough features to get a lot of people on board.
The other thing I'll say is this is still kind of a leak. So I think there may be other features that haven't come out yet. It's potential. So we'll keep an eye on this. We'll see what actually comes out, the pricing, and if it actually is legit. But it could be cool. The ads, honestly, I feel like I don't ever really see... I guess I see ads on Twitter, but they're so unintrusive compared to YouTube and Twitch that I just don't really see the need for it. But I don't know. Maybe if you guys see a lot of ads on Twitter, you feel differently.
It's a lot of promoted tweets usually, isn't it? That's what I see mostly as ads, where they've tried to target like what based on what my interests are, like a new Twitter account or a giveaway or something like that. Good point from One King in the chat. We just need higher quality uploads, please, Twitter.
Yes.
Like Twitter's compression is crazy. Sometimes I put a 1080p photo up and I'm looking at it in my desktop being like, what have they done to this photo? And then it's fine on mobile and I'm debating deleting this tweet and uploading a version at a different resolution to try and get better quality. It seems like if you upload above a certain quality, it just gets compressed when you're seeing it on the timeline. So I think there must be some new resolutions that you should upload at, which will benefit from people scrolling through desktop. But it's not just my tweets that's happening on. I see it on several different people's tweets. And yeah, uploading videos or short videos that get turned into GIFs, like the compression is pretty horrible. So that would be cool if they added, you know, some way of having higher quality video and images
right
through Twitter. But then it's kind of hard because not everybody's going to be benefiting from that. So you as a creator, unless you're the one supporting it, you know.
Yeah, I think that could definitely be a big benefit. What's interesting is that between this change and the donation stuff, it almost seems like you can make Twitter because it really haven't had much monetization on Twitter before, right? It's been mostly a supplementary platform for just getting extra news out, things like that. But theoretically, if they add the donation and, like you said, doing almost like a prime tweet donation, whatever it is, in the future, you could almost make your income off of Twitter, which would be a new thing, I think. So that'd be interesting to keep an eye out, especially because it's so ingrained in the streamer side of things too. And we have those people who just do streamer reporting and lots of really good tweets. So it'd be interesting to see if that comes on the rise the next couple of months with this coming out.
I think Twitter would just become such a legitimate place for journalists if when the tip jar feature comes out. Like, there are so many people that just report stories first on Twitter because it's so quick. You don't have to worry about logging into your news website and writing an article and getting the right image. You can literally do it from your phone so quickly. So Twitter is often where like news breaks first. So I feel like loads of journalists, if they could get supported from Tipjar, would, you know, that'd be awesome and it'd really help with Twitter. But yeah, yet again, another platform looking at ways to help support content creators on the platform. But we're not really talking about Tipjar, we're more talking about Twitter Blue. But let's move on. Did you see this clip from Ninja discussing how much money he made during the Fortnite era?
Yeah, this one I had to dig for it. Apparently, so Ninja was staying on stream talking about his Fortnite days. Basically, back in 2018, he was kind of at his all-time peak, and the Fortnite had released their creator codes, that kind of thing. He had his own creator code. This was during the huge Twitch Prime era and Drake and everything else. He basically revealed that he made $5 million in 1 month just from the creator code revenue, which he said was his all-time that he earned from the creator code platform, which is crazy. Like, just from that one revenue stream, he got $5 million in a month, which just shows to show you like how much you can make outside of subs and partnerships and all the ways you can make income as a streamer. So I just thought that was crazy. Did you have any thoughts there?
It's just a nuts amount of money, isn't it? Support a creator code. I don't even know what the revenue split is between the streamer and Epic. I can't imagine it's even 50-50. I would have thought it'd be even worse than that. So yeah, it's an unreal amount of money. I mean, he does come across a little bit arrogant in the clip when he's like explaining how much money he's made. But if that's true, like, I'm just trying to work out how much money he was probably actually making during that time. Because if Creator Code was giving 5 million a month, he was top of the Twitch charts in terms of Prime subscriptions, wasn't he? You know, somewhere near 200,000 on that. And then you've got all the sponsorships on top of that. Like, he really must have milked it in that year. I'm kind of surprised he's still streaming now, because he could absolutely retire. Sounds like he has a lot going on. But yeah, it's interesting, because that will have been the decision by Epic, just to implement that as a feature at some point. Like, oh, if we can help content creators earn some money through this, they'll help promote it, and they'll help promote the shop whenever they're live streaming, because they want people to use their code, and then we'll make more money. So it was like a win-win for Epic and for the content creators. But I wouldn't have even thought it was 10% of that amount, really, at its peak. I can't believe it was 5 million in a month. That's,
yeah,
streamers now, top streamers can just make absolute bank
just off of this one thing alone. It's crazy. And obviously Ninja is the exception, right? He has to be one of the top three people who's ever made the most money from this thing. But it's still kind of crazy. I looked up, I tried to find out how much the split is, and it doesn't really say specifically. It seems like they kind of change it per game and per creator, but at least 5% is what the split is. So it's interesting to think, like, how much money Epic made from that during the same month and over the whole program. Because I haven't seen a lot of other games do the support a creator type thing. If you think about a lot of the AAA games in this category, because I guess it's like you're just losing out on money theoretically if you're a brand, but at the same time, like you said, maybe it actually leads to more money if you have the creator pushing it. So it's interesting. I'd love to see the data on what the split actually was.
I'm sure it leads to more money. Like, I bet if Riot Games had thought of it, they would have implemented it into Valorant. Like,
but all why these, not?
I mean, they can you do know? Now. Yeah, I guess if they're okay with copying, which they clearly are, since Valorant is CS:GO and League of Legends is Dota 2.
of League's games.
They really should implement it, because it makes so much sense. It helps creators. Creators will promote it more. And, you know, these free-to-play models for games anyway are clearly making so much money because of skins, and you get people buying skins. I don't know if they need more skins to be sold, but these companies want to scale, absolutely. So, yeah, just a crazy amount of money that he made from that. And I'm surprised he ever stopped playing Fortnite, if that was even possible in 1 month. I would just be promoting it the whole time. Coming to the end of the news this week, I think that's everything, because we've covered the Twitch 70-30 split, which is the only thing that we didn't have. So I don't know if any viewers in chat have a question that they want us to answer, or if you've picked any out during the time that we've been streaming. I did pin something to the top of the chat to hopefully get a few more questions in that we could maybe answer. But yeah, if you do have a question, why don't you submit it now, and me and Ben can take a look and maybe answer it.
Yep, let us know, guys, if you have one. We got a couple minutes here. I did see one person ask about YouTube Shorts while we were on that topic. If videos have hashtag shorts in the title, are they actually shorts? So I don't think so. Like, you could still make a video with that in the title, right? And it not actually be a short.
Yeah, I think.
I
think for it to qualify as a short, I'm doing this from memory. I think it has to be less than 60 seconds and have hashtag or pound symbol shorts in the title or in the description, and then YouTube will categorize that. And you obviously have to be a creator that can upload a short, which is just rolled out to the whole of the US. I think for the rest of the world, it's still only certain creators can create shorts, people over a certain sub count, I would imagine. So yeah, it's something that I said when we were talking about the YouTube Shorts Creator Fund, I need more experience in it. I think right now, for any creator in the US can create a short, and it just needs to be 60 seconds or less with hashtag shorts in the title or in the description. It doesn't even need to be vertical format. They don't have that as a requirement. So I don't know how 16:9 videos show when you're browsing on mobile. Maybe they're cropped. I'd imagine they're probably cropped, and it's just not a great viewing experience. But I think that hopefully answers the question. But yeah, I need to experiment more. Well, we need to experiment more, don't we, Ben?
Yeah, I still have not really gotten into that video type. I'm not a TikToker yet. I might try it soon, though. Like you said, it's such a big wave right now that I feel like you're losing out on so much, because you can post it everywhere now, too, and you get your money from YouTube and also get on TikTok. And so what's not to like with that, you know? I saw a couple questions come in here. We got a couple options to choose from.
Oh, nice.
So there's a question from Mr. Milo who said he started streaming retro game and discussion content. Should I focus on Twitch, YouTube, or Facebook? So this is retro gaming, but I think it kind of applies to anything. Like, how do you choose a platform essentially with your specific content type? You have thoughts?
I think it completely depends on if you already have a presence on any of those platforms. If you've already been creating retro game content on YouTube, it may well make sense to just start live streaming there and you already have a bit of an audience there. Because we've talked in great depth about how hard it is to grow on Twitch because it's not a discoverable platform. But if you're just starting out, I would recommend going with whichever one you like using the most and whichever one you think your viewers are already on. So if you know of some other content creators that are making similar content, what platform are they on? Because you kind of want to go to where your audience already is would be my answer to the question. But you're more of a versed live streamer than I am, Ben. So what's your take?
I mean, I think the thing to know about this question is I don't think you're going to find like some special retro audience on Twitch or YouTube or Facebook. I mean, there may be out there, but I don't think there's like a key demographic to one of those. I think it's more like Pete said about the platform that you like. I do think YouTube is helpful in the fact that you could supplement it with videos at least around a specific retro game and get some content out that way. But I think you can kind of choose any platform that you like in terms of the actual live stream itself. So just, and you can even try them all out and see which one sticks out the best for you. I think that's usually what we recommend for new streamers.
Yeah, good advice. Let's just do one more. I've seen a question here from Height Above Sea Level who asks, how long do you think it is before YouTube viewers get used to tipping YouTube streamers and used to that general culture? So I think this is something that we've said is so amazing about Twitch, really, isn't it? Is the culture of supporting creators on that platform is really hard to build. It's really hard to copy. You know, YouTube can't just all of a sudden have people supporting creators, because if anything, a lot of people are used to watching YouTubers for free and, you know, just dealing with ads as their way of supporting creators. So it's hard to build that into the culture. It's something that has to kind of grow naturally, and YouTube is taking the right steps, but it's something that happens on Twitch by default. So what changes do you think need to make to try and help creators earn more money through the join memberships button?
YouTube Prime win. That's all I'm gonna say there. I mean, honestly, Twitch Prime really changed the game, I think, with how common subscriptions became and also the perks they have for subscriptions, right? Being able to use your emotes in every chat and things like that. But it got built up over years on Twitch to the point where it is today. But yeah, I think if they could add a Prime type feature where you get a free trial essentially of a subscription, that would be huge for, you know, re-upping that subscription and doing that kind of thing in the future. So hopefully that could come. I don't know if we'll actually see it, but that'd be huge.
I think it has to come from a feature point of view. There has to be enough reason for a viewer to want to support a creator outside of it just being supporting a creator. There has to be, you know, ad-free experience and all those kind of things that are currently supported. But maybe YouTube needs to think a little bit out of the box to really encourage users to, you know, part with their cash and support a creator. So it's difficult. I don't think they can just copy Twitch's feature set and expect people to then support creators in the same way. So hopefully that answers your question. I did see a couple of comments as well of people that have missed the start of the show and wanted to hear a bit more about the shorts fund. The DVR feature of YouTube, you should be able to rewind and watch this podcast from the start. And I leave it up and listed anyway once the podcast is finished. So hopefully you can rewind and see all the questions about that. But I think that'll probably do it for us, Ben. I've loved doing this show live. It's so great to be able to take questions directly from chat and see their opinions on Discord's questionable font choice. But yeah, we're live every single Monday. What do you want to say?
I was going to say, I know there's some other questions in the chat, guys. If you have questions, if we didn't get to them, you can always leave a comment below because we'll check those for next week. Or, you know, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you want. We can always check those out and bring those up. It helps us if we have it in advance, actually. Then we can kind of make sure we break it into the show ahead of time, too.
Yeah, exactly. So every week I'll try and remember to put a pinned comment on the live stream asking for questions. And we're going to try and work out a way, but maybe we can filter some questions in. So, you know, people can get their questions answered ahead of time and that we can make sure that we're going to cover them. But that'll probably do it. Thanks, everybody, for watching, for tuning in to the show. I've really enjoyed it, as always. We're going to be keeping our eyes peeled on Twitter and the Twitch blog to see what else gets announced from these platforms over the next coming week. And we will be covering it next Monday. Same time slot, every single week. And we'll see you then. Peace.
See ya.